this is James from StrawPunk.com.
And this is his co-host with the most, Couch Potato Mike. Welcoming all of our loyal listeners out there to our very special Halloween edition of Survival Punk Podcast.
Where we thought we would share with you a little piece of our past that we just don't talk about that much. That, I mean, not really a secret, it's nothing we're ashamed of, but I just haven't felt the place for it to come up yet.
Yeah, you see, a long, long time ago, during the origins of our friendship, which you might have actually read about on the website, we found ourselves homeless, living in a Ford Escort.
Yeah, and we didn't have jobs. We needed some money, and we just couldn't find anything. You know, when you don't have an address, like, you know, we live in Escort, and you know, we sleep at the rest stops. So it was kind of hard to find real jobs, so Mike came across the idea of becoming bounty hunters.
Yeah, we actually, we studied up on it, we started to take the classes and everything. We never actually completed and got our certification because a different opportunity fell into our lap at that moment.
Yeah, so we stumbled across the underground hidden world of monster hunting.
It all started one night at one of the rest areas that we were sleeping at. My friend here he had just dozed off when I heard a rustling out by the garbage cans. I looked over to see what looked like a dead cat. Now, feeding on this dead cat was something I had never seen before. It stood on its hind legs about 2.5 to 3 feet tall and had glowing red eyes. I didn't know at that moment, but I had just come face to face with a chupacabra.
Those things are scary, dude. Those things are scary. Normally, I would run from chupacabra, but you've got balls, and you went after that thing, dude.
Oh, yeah. I lunged at it. I'm like, if I get this, if I actually capture a chupacabra alive, we could be millionaires and get out of, and start living in a nicer car.
Yeah, we could have all the like pizza buffets we could possibly ever want.
And all the pizza buffets I could ever possibly throw up.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, I did not get that chupacabra, but that spurred the spirit within us both. That spurred the spirit, and we went out and sought it, and we found the underground world of monster hunting. Believe it or not, in Nashville, the music city, there's not that many monster hunters.
No, so it's sort of a burgeoning job enterprise there. There was a need in the market for people to slay monsters. Turned out, we happen to have a knack for it. I mean, we took to it like white on rice.
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't long after that we actually got in the midst of keeping the zombie apocalypse from actually happening. The startings of the zombie apocalypse starting in Nashville, we managed to keep that at bay. We've gone after werewolves. We have gone after vampires. We have now slain chupacabras. And on one trip up north, I actually managed to get a piece of the Jersey Devil.
Badass.
Absolutely.
We don't want to, like, toot our own horns here, but we've kind of stopped the apocalypse, what, 12 times? 13 times? Something like that?
13, 14, something like that.
Who keeps counts, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But we're going to be talking about that a little bit tonight. We've also got some field reporters for the first time ever.
Yeah, I had, so it seems like things right now are starting to wind up. I'm not sure what's going on. We're investigating it. But it looks like there's sort of a critical mass coming. There's more sightings. There's more attacks going on. So I've got some buddies in the industry. They're all also like survival bloggers like myself. But we sort of do this on the side. It's sort of a hidden secret group where we're bloggers, but we're also monster hunters.
Coming up on All Hallows Eve like we are, it's time we realize we've kind of let things slide. After me and you retired, a lot of people followed suit because there just wasn't that many monsters left to slay.
Right.
And now this upsurgence of those beasts that we let go is coming back, and we're getting reports in from all over the country. Some former guests of ours also are part of the Brotherhood of Slayers.
Right.
And they will be calling in later. That we'll have their reports up. But also,
I mean, this being a prepping and survivalist show, I felt it behooved me to talk about the preps that you need, the preparations you should take to defend yourself against this growing epidemic problem.
Yes, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what to expect from various types of vampires and how you can take each of the bloodsuckers down. We're going to be discussing all the tools over at Gadget Punk that you're going to need to perform a successful ghost hunting operation.
a very important prep to have to defend yourself against a host of things. Everything from demons to hellhounds to ghosts. What you need, this one item can do it all.
And we're going to have a very scary edition of Mike's Worst Monster Cases this week. But, so let's go ahead and do a little housekeeping up front. Let our sponsors know that we still love them. And
even though things are going south.
Now, absolutely. Now, when you're dealing with werewolves, when you're dealing with vampires, you know what you're going to need? You're going to need silver. Where's a great place to get your silver?
JMBullion.com, the place that you get your silver from. It can be used. A little bit of silver can go a long way with fighting these monsters. And on top of being a monetary hedge, it could save your life.
Absolutely.
For a good price. Silver right now is at an amazing price. There's no reason not to stock up. And if things do go bad, you can always smelt it down and make knives and bullets out of it.
Yeah, now people know the other reason for your silver collection.
Exactly. I need a lot of silver because, werewolves, you need a silver bullet to kill them with.
So if you're wanting to stock up on silver for your own protection, go to survivalpunk.com, find that banner on the right side, click and prepare for the oncoming onslaught. And you're going to need to stay awake during those long monster hunts.
Exactly.
You're going to need to stay alert. And what's the best thing in the world to keep you awake?
Mai Tai coffee. And my personal favorite, their espresso roast, which I just devoured all of. And you're absolutely right. Most of these creatures tend to do most of their stuff nocturnally. They're out at night. You're going to need something to stay up. And drinking a strong pot or several of Mai Tai coffee will help you get through those nights and help keep you alive.
Absolutely. Now, say you have to flee the city, though. You're out in the wilderness. You're sneaking up on their den. You have to attack by night, though. What are you going to need? You're going to need supplies. Where can you get those supplies?
CampingSurvival.com, the place you need all your camping and survival stuff to bug out and to bug in. And if you mention you're hunting werewolves, they might even throw in some wolfsbane or some other possible goodies you need to help fight them with.
Citation needed. So just find their link on the banner on the right hand side, survivalpunk.com. And another thing you're going to need when fighting monsters, guess what? You know what's a good thing that kills monsters? The same thing that kills everything else.
You're going to need ammunition, and Freedom Munitions is the best place to get that at. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they do have silver bullets, so stock up on all your regular ammunition and your silver bullets at Freedom Munitions to keep yourself safe from the hordes of undead.
And there's only one way to check to see if they have the silver bullets. Go to survivalpunk.com and find their banner on the right-hand side.
And with that, let's jump right into the show today.
All right, coming up, our first Halloween-related news story. Five reasons the zombie apocalypse could actually happen. This is from the zombie section at the good folks over at crack.com. I think there's actually some members of the Brotherhood possibly working over there because they really seem to know what they're talking about when it comes down to this. Now, well, you're going scroll-tastic, aren't you?
Yeah. Okay, so let's...
Okay.
I'll let you start off here.
Starting off, number five. Brain parasites, as seen in Resident Evil 4. What are they? Parasites that turn victims into mindless zombie-like slaves are fairly common in nature. There's one called Toxoplasmosis gondii that seems to devote its entire existence to being terrifying. The bug infects rats, but can only breed inside the intestines of a cat. The parasite knows it needs to get the rat inside the cat. Yes, we realize that sounds like the beginning of a most fucked up Dr. Seuss poem ever. So the parasite takes over the rat's freaking brain and intentionally makes it scurry towards where the cats hang out. The rat is being programmed to get itself eaten. It doesn't even know. Of course, those are just rats, right? How can it result in zombies? Hey, did we mention that half the human population on Earth is infected with toxoplasmosis and don't know it? Hey, maybe you're one of them. Flip a coin. Oh, also, they've done studies that shown that the infected see a change in their personality and have a higher chance of going batshit insane.
Bet a bunch of my exes have been infected with it, dude.
I would be willing to bet so as well. Chances this could cause a zombie apocalypse? Humans and rats aren't that all different. That's why they use them to test our drugs. All it takes is more evolved version of Toxoplasmosis, one that could do to us
what it does to the rats. So imagine if half the world suddenly had no instinct for self-preservation or rational thought, even less than they do now, we mean. If you're comforting yourself with the thought that it may take forever for such parasites to evolve, you're forgetting about the biological weapons programs around the world, intentionally weaponizing such bugs. You've got to wonder if the lab workers don't carry out that work under the unwitting commands of the Toxoplasmosis Gandhi already in their brains. If you don't want to sleep at night, that's it. You may be protesting that technically these people have never been dead and thus don't fit the dictionary definition of zombies, but we can assure you that the distinction won't matter a whole lot once these groaning hordes are clawing their way through your windows.
All right. Number 4. Neurotoxins. As seen in the movie Serpent and the Rainbow and upcoming Resident Evil 5 video games. What are they? There are certain kinds of poisons that slow your body functions to the point that you'll be considered dead, even to a doctor. Okay, maybe not to a good doctor. The poison from Fugu, Japanese blowfish, can do this. The victims can be brought back under the effects of a drug like Datura Statorium or other chemicals called alkaloids that leave them in a trance-like state with no memory. But still able to perform simple tasks like eating, sleeping, moaning, and shambling around with their arms outstretched. How can it result in zombies? Can. How about does? This stuff has happened in Haiti. That's where the word zombie comes from. There are books about it, and the most famous ones by Dr. Wade Davis, Passage of Darkness and The Serpent and the Rainbow. Yes, the movie The Serpent and the Rainbow is based on this guy's actual scientific stuff. How much of it was fact? Well, there was that one scene where they strapped the guy naked to the chair and drove a huge spike through his balls. We're hoping that part wasn't true. What is definitely true is the story of Clervius Narcissi. He was a Haitian guy who declared dead by two doctors and buried in 1962. They found him wandering around the village 18 years later. It turned out that the voodoo priest had been using naturally occurring chemicals to basically zombify people, putting them to work on the sugar plantations. No, really. So next time you're pouring out a little packet of sugar in your coffee, remember that it may have been handled by a zombie at some point. Chances that this would cause a zombie apocalypse. On one hand, it's already fucking happened. So that earns it some street cred right off the bat. But even if some evil genius intentionally distributed alkaloid toxins to a population to turn them into a shambling mindless horde, there's no way to make zombies aggressive or cannibalistic. Yet.
Number 3. The Real Rage Virus, as seen in 28 Days Later. What is it? In the movie, it was a virus that turned human beings into mindless killing machines. In real life, we have a series of brain disorders that do the same thing. They were never contagious, of course. Then mad cow disease came along. It attacks the cow's spinal cords and brain, turning it into a stumbling, mindless attack cow. And when humans eat the meat? How can it result in zombies? When mad cow gets into humans, they call it Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Check out the symptoms. Changes in gait, walking, hallucinations, lack of coordination, for example, stumbling and falling, muscle twitching, myoclonic jerks or seizures, rapidly developing delirium or dementia. Sure, this disease is rare, though maybe not as rare as we think, and the affected aren't known to chase after people in murderous mobs yet, but it proves widespread brain infections of the rage variety are just a matter of waiting for the right disease to come along. Chance this could cause a zombie apocalypse? If the whole sudden mindless violence idea seems far-fetched, remember that you are just one brain chemical, serotonin, away from turning into a mindless killing machine. They've tested it by putting rats in deathmatch-style cages and watching them turn on each other. All it would take is a disease that destroys the brain's ability to absorb that one chemical, and suddenly it's a real world 28 days later. So imagine such an evolved disease, which we'll call Super Mad Cow or Matter Cow, getting a foothold through the food supply. Say this disease spreads through blood-on-blood contact or saliva-on-blood contact. Now you have a rage-type virus that can be transmitted with a bite. Just like the movie, with one bite, you're suddenly the worst kind of zombie. A fast zombie.
Fast zombies creep me out.
Oh, God.
I'm glad we've not really encountered many fast zombies, you and I. Mostly the shambling ones.
Yeah.
I might run like a little bitch if we encounter fast ones.
Yeah, fortunately, I'm thinking that's just part of media and movies trying to make them scarier, because all the ones we've seen have been shufflers.
Yeah. So number two, neurogenesis, as seen in laboratories around the world. What is it? You know all that controversy out there about stem cell research? Well, the whole thing with stem cells is that they can basically be used to regenerate dead cells. Particularly of interest in zombologists, like ourselves, is new neurogenesis, the method by which they can regrow dead brain tissue. You can see where this is going. How can it result in zombies? You wanted the undead to make an appearance in this article? Well, here you go, you creepy bastards. Science can pretty much save you from anything but brain death. They can swap out the organs, but when the brain turns to mush, you're gone, right? Well, not for long. They are already able to grow the brains of comatose head trauma patients until they wake up and walk around again. Oh, God. Couple that with a new ability to keep the dead body in a state of suspended animation so that it can be brought back to life later, and soon we'll be able to bring back the dead, as long as we get to them quickly enough. That sounds great, right? Well, this lab dedicated to reanimation research, yes, that's what they call it, explains how the process of reanimating a person creates a problem. It causes the brain to die off from the outside in, the outside being the cortex, the nice part that makes humans human. That just leaves the part that controls the basic motor functions and primitive instincts behind.
Anybody who's seen the first season of The Walking Dead knows that that's the only part of the brain that reanimates, that internal part that controls all your motor functions.
Yeah. You don't need the cortex to survive. All you need is a stem, and you'll be able to mindlessly walk and eat and enjoy Grey's Anatomy. This is how chickens can keep walking around after you've beheaded them, including one case where a chicken lived for 18 months without a head.
I told you about that.
You were telling me about that. So, you take the brain-dead patient, use this technique to regrow the brain stem, and now you have a mindless body shuffling around, no thoughts and no personality, nothing but a cloud of base instincts and impulses, like eating. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what we like to call a real, live, undead fucking zombie. So there. Chances this could cause a zombie apocalypse? Think about it. Under every legal system in the world, all rights and responsibilities are terminated at death. All it takes is someone with resources and a need for a mindless workforce of totally obedient slave labor, like Walmart. How long if someone tries this? We're betting somebody in the world, maybe North Korea, will have a working zombie by Christmas.
And number one, nanobots, as seen in Michael Crichton's novel Prey, the PS2 game Nanobreaker. Where are they? Nanobots are technology that science apparently engineered to make you terrified of the future. We're talking about microscopic, self-replicating robots that can invisibly build or destroy anything. Vast sums of money are being poured into nanotechnology. Sure, at some level, scientists know nanobots will destroy mankind. They just can't resist seeing how it happens. How it can result in zombies? Scientists have already created a nano-cyborg by fusing a tiny silicone chip to a virus.
Oh,
the
God.
First thing they found out is the cyborgs can still operate for a month after the death of the host. Notice how nanoscientists were ripe for zombification? Even at this early stage, they know where the horror is. According to studies, within a decade, they'll have nanobots that can crawl inside your brain and set up neural connections to replace damaged ones. That's right. The nanobots will be able to rewire your thoughts. What could possibly go wrong? Chances this could result in a zombie apocalypse? Do the math, people! Someday there will be nanobots in your brain. Those nanobots will be programmed to keep functioning after you die. They can form their own neural pathways, meaning that they can use your brain to keep operating your limbs after you're deceased and presumably right up until you rot to pieces in mid-stride. The nanobots will be programmed to self-replicate, and the death of the host will mean the end of the... And the death of the host will mean the end of the nanobots. To preserve themselves, they'll need to transfer to a new host. Therefore, the last act of the nanobot zombie would be to bite a hole in a healthy victim, letting the nanobots steam in and set up camp in the new host. Once in, they can shut down the part of the brain that resists
the cortex, and leave the brainstem intact. They will have added a new member to the unholy army of the undead. Now, it should be more than clear by this point that our goal is to be responsible researchers. We don't want to create a panic here. All we're saying is that on an actual day, on the actual calendar, in the future, runaway microscopic nanobots will end civilization by flooding the planet with cannibalistic undead. Science has proven it.
Thank you, Crack.com, for your research and helpful information, as always.
And for the month full of future nightmares that all of our listeners are now going to have.
Yeah, the nanobot ones. Creepy. Yeah.
And just think about a combination of those things. Nanobot, they're already talking about the parasite that can get into you. What if that gets nanobots on it?
Yeah.
Oh my god. We're doomed. We're just so doomed. That's why the world needs people like us. We're spreading the truth.
To help fight, exactly.
Whether the black hats want us to or not. Coming up next in the news is a medical mystery. An Iowa boy has no urge to eat or drink.
Yeah, so doing research for possible cases, you know, because me and Mike might be coming out of retirement to try to end some of this insanity going on.
It's not a want, it's possibly a have to.
I mean, we might have to save the world again. So looking for cases, I came across this medical mystery. An Iowa boy of 12 has no urge to eat or drink. Cedar Falls, Iowa. The soundtrack of daily life in the Jones household is a persistent mantra that Michael and Debbie intone for their 12-year-old son, Landon. Take a bite. Take a bite. Take a bite. Take a drink. Take a drink. Take a bite. These parents have forced to jabber away like this the last year because their son's mysterious illness. He lacks all impulse to eat or drink, and he might be the only person in the world burdened with this bizarre medical condition. Michael, 43, who prods most often, is a desperate father. He's become a verbal robot in a grim campaign to keep his boy fed. Take a bite. Take a bite. Take a drink. We feel like we're seeing him deteriorate in front of our eyes, Michael said. Landon, an avid rock music fan, probably satanic rock, Michael, would rather be listening to Aerosmith or The Cars. But he's sick and he needs these constant reminders from his dad. It all began when Landon woke on the morning of October 14th, 2013. Suddenly, having lost all sense of hunger and thirst, he was dizzy and nearly to the point of passing out. His chest was clogged with phlegm that he kept coughing up. The previous day seemed normal. Landon had been riding his bicycle and devoured a bowl of ice cream and slices of pizza. Told you pizza will kill you. Something happened in the middle of the night, Michael said, and he woke up this way, and he hasn't stopped. An actual chest x-ray revealed bacterial infection in Landon's left lung that soon was eradicated.
But that was just the beginning of the gauntlet of doctor's appointments and medical tests in the last year that have taken this family to five cities. Their local pediatricians in Waterloo, Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, Madison, Wisconsin, and the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, in a frustrating quest for clear answers and a cure. Landon now is being considered for an appointment at the National Institute of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, which examine a relative handful of the rarest cases annually. He began to shed 2 pounds per week last fall and has withered from his former weight of 104 pounds to a gaunt, tenuous 64 pounds.
Wow.
Michael and Debbie, married 14 years, have battled every ounce of the way in a futile effort to pack pounds back on their oldest son. He wants to feel normal. Landon arrived home from school last week with a playful brother, Bryce, 9. Kind of the Woody Allen of the school, as Michael described him. The parents pulled Landon's lunchbox out of his backpack. One bite was missing from the corner of the ham and cheese sandwich they sent with him. The boy had munched perhaps half a dozen chips. Bryce and the family's Labrador bloodhound mutt, Bailey, romped through the living room, a blur of happy energy, swirling around the lethargic Landon. The weary, bespeckled boy tends to lie on the sofa after school. He missed 65 days of school last year.
Wow.
His parents haven't seen Landon run all year. The boy gamely will try to ride the bicycle, a quick coast followed by a weary trudge back uphill, pushing the bike. Landon, lingered on the sidelines last week in PE while the classmates played football. He had to set aside the trombone last year, exhaling enough breath to bleat a note left him dizzy.
Landon, with zero appetite, struggles at the extreme opposite end of the spectrum as America battles rampant childhood obesity. It has more than doubled in children to nearly 18% of ages 6 to 11, and quadrupled in adolescents nearly 21% for ages 12 to 19 in the last 30 years, according to the Centers for Disease Control. His parents have tried to tempt Landon with every possible variety of fast food. He plans to dress up as a zombie pirate for Halloween, but won't enjoy a single piece of candy. All he wants to do is feel like a normal kid. Michael quit work to spend more time with tending Landon. His varied career has included time as a certified nursing assistant and his own pest control business in Cedar Falls. Debbie has been a medical assistant in the lab at Allen Hospital in Waterloo for 13 years. He can still taste and smell. During the 25-minute lunch break at school last year, father and son would sit at the own table to maintain the necessary routine. Take a bite, take a bite, take a bite, take a drink. This year, Landon has eaten through an entire school days on his own. One of the sixth grader teacher flashes a subtle hand signal while in front of the class to clue Landon to take drinks from his water bottle. In the back of your head, try to remember mom and dad's voice, Michael and Debbie told their son at the start of the semester. Take a bite, take a bite, take a drink. The next step will be to insert a gastronomy tube in Landon's abdomen, circumventing the boy's mouth to nourish him directly through a hole in his stomach.
Ugh.
Michael and Debbie essentially have been surrogates for what has assumed to be Landon's malfunctioning hypothalamus, a control center at the base of his brain, the size of a flattened pea. It regulates not only hunger and thirst, but also body temperature, blood pressure, sleep cycles, and other automatic functions. Dr. Mark Peterson, Mayo Clinic, child neurologist with 33 years of experience, who first examined Landon in November, said the boy very well may be the only case of his kind in the world. We will stop there.
I'm guessing something attacked this boy, possibly even destroying or eating his hypothalamus. I've not seen a monster that does that. We're going to have to hit the books pretty hard on this one.
Yeah. This is a new symptom on my, It doesn't fit in with the zombies at all because they have an unquenchable hunger.
Yeah, it's something stole this boy's hunger and causing him to waste away.
Maybe a weakened form of vampire?
Something that eats on the hypothalamus. It steals the hunger away.
Well, our prayers go out to this kid and our best wishes, and I hope that one day he gets his appetite back.
Yes.
Maybe a little voodoo will help. I'm not really sure. Worked for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You put on some weight since,
I kicked anorexia's ass.
Yeah. Yeah. You used to be a beanpole, yeah.
All right. I think it's, time for our first, field report. We got Scary Dad on the line.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take this call from Scary Dad.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Scary Dad just calling in to give you a couple tips and tricks monster killing. Today we're going to talk about some vampires. I mean, I know it's a little common, but they are becoming a little more common. And, you know, what with diversity being what it is these days, they're getting a little bit harder to identify. So what you need to do, you need to make sure you have the right tools for the job. Now, you know, holy water, you know, crosses, things of that nature. That was all good back in the day when most of the vampires were, you know, at least former Christians. But, you know, these days you could have a Jewish vampire or a Muslim vampire, and you know, blood diseases don't really discriminate. So, you know, and if you don't want to have a backpack full of artifacts just to use for, you know, you want to pull out a cross and find out it doesn't work, you know, they'll be on you, like, you know, you'll be undead before you even know it. One thing that does work, it works universally across the board, is a stake through the heart. you know. And I really recommend always having a couple of good sharpened stakes, you know, kind of in your car, in your backpack, you know. Some bows and arrows, some crossbows, you know, that wooden stake, I mean, that takes them down every single time. Another thing you need to be careful of is to identify that really actually is a vampire. There are plenty of people out there, you know, that kind of emulate the vampires. You know, you got goth kids, you got hippies, you've got, you know, just kind of some crazy people that wander around making noise and kind of looking scary. And now the good thing is a stake through the heart works on them too. The bad thing is that a stake through the heart works on them too. So, you know, if you stake a vampire, he typically will scream a lot and then, you know, throw a little fit and then burst into ash and kind of fall away and blow away in the wind. If you stake a goth kid or a hippie, you might have a little bit bigger problem on your hands than, you know, a pile of ash that you need a broom for. So, you know, you want to make sure that what you're hitting really is what you're hitting. I know from experience I have accidentally taken out a couple of, you know, hippies. That's really kind of awkward and embarrassing. It makes you have to leave the scene, you know. So I would recommend, you know, maybe even just give them a little poke, because the vampire just doesn't like that wood. If you poke them, they'll scream. So, you know, say if you want to learn a little bit more about monsters, where to find them, how to kill them, and, you know, whether you want to be scared or entertained, you can hit me up at scarydad.com. Thanks a lot. Hope you guys have a great Halloween. Bye.
All right. Good stuff from Scary Dad on vampires. Good solid stuff.
Oh, absolutely. You never want to be too careful out there. You got to make the right identifications.
Yeah, I mean, come on now. Who hasn't staked a goth kid before an accident?
Hell, I've staked one knowing it was a goth kid.
I mean, like, well, I don't know, I kind of like the goth kids, but I've definitely staked a bunch of emo kids. You know, you just blame it on, oh, I totally thought he was a vampire. My bad. No one even gets mad at you.
My father-in-law's used the excuse he thought he was a deer.
Yeah. I thought he was a deer. All right. Sir, he was in your front yard.
All right. Well, I think it's time for us to move on to our main topic for the evening, something that is very near and dear to our damn near bitten hearts.
Yeah. Fighting zombies. We've been doing this for 10 years?
10 years off and on.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a couple years since we actually fought some zombies. But we've taken out hundreds, nay, thousands.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. So we want to share with you a couple of the tips and tricks that we've picked up over the years from fighting the zombie hordes.
Oh, absolutely.
But like we said earlier, we have only ever encountered the slow zombies.
Right.
We would probably not be here today to talk to you had we encountered the fast-moving zombies.
For all those out there that have seen, like, World War Z or Zombieland, any of those where the bastards are running, there's no way of surviving that particular zombie. World War Z, for God's sakes, it's like a 12-second changing cycle, and they will just frickin' lunge themselves. Don't get me wrong, a real zombie will come at you with no frickin' regard to their own safety. They have no survival instinct at this point. Which can actually be both a blessing and a curse in a fight.
You can't spook them off. That's not gonna work.
You can sometimes distract them. I don't know if you've seen any of the old Romero films, but fireworks actually are a successful distraction for a minute. Fireworks don't tend to last that long, and they usually don't like to just sit around and wait for you to light the next Roman fucking candle.
Right. Noises of any kind, they tend to follow. So if you can set off some remote noise, if you can go off into a spot and set off an air horn, you will draw them fuckers like you won't believe. And if you set up in a nice sniper spot, you can just pick them off all day.
Now, there's always my old time-elapse tape recorder kit. Anytime we ever actually needed to get past them to get to our supplies, we used to have this one beautiful tape recorder. I could set that thing to go off anywhere from 30 seconds to half an hour. And it would just start blaring. I would set it behind a wall. I've even buried the thing. It was really fucking loud, and they would just go crazy going after that. All zombies are attracted to sound.
Right.
I always preferred that method over the other method to get by them. And that's completely covering yourself in their stink. You just slather yourself in zombie guts, hang body parts out of your pockets and stuff. Just cover yourself in zombie black gick.
Now, they actually did, and I was actually very impressed on The Walking Dead, because they've used that trick a couple of times.
It totally works. We've done that for years.
As recently as this past season, Carol on the show, she actually used that to get into Terminus, spoilers. But, you know, that actually does work. It's very freaking disgusting, and you actually have to be very careful. That's why we don't recommend this. If you're going to do that, I would recommend wearing some kind of a full body suit, something covering your freaking mouth. You do not want to get zombie blood or zombie guts into your mouth. It's a very slight chance, slim, but not impossible for that to turn you.
Yeah, and I've had troubles before where...
That's how we lost Fruit Loop.
You are going to be this is going to make you sick, and if I tend to throw up fairly easily, being surrounded by zombies with Mike sneaking by, and I start chucking everywhere.
Believe
I'm just blowing chunks like I'm on The Exorcist.
Zombies actually do take notice of people throwing up. Zombies don't throw up. They might be stupid. And they might damn near be brain dead, but they're not completely brain dead. Zombies don't vomit.
Yeah. I've only seen Mike run one time in my entire life, and that was it. He looked at me and it was like, we gotta get the fuck out of here. We are so screwed right now, dude.
Honestly, that day I was just trying to outrun you.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I mean, it was a breaking point. You'd eaten the last fucking Twinkie, and I just couldn't help it. I just couldn't help it. You're lucky I didn't put Ipecac in your damn thermos.
Oh my, I was already throwing up easy enough.
I know, it doesn't take much with you.
Yeah.
Now, I think we should also talk about heat. Zombies can sense heat. That's something they actually don't talk about a lot on the shows. They can sense heat sources. They go after movement and they go after sound. Which, believe it or not, most people don't realize this, but fire is a very helpful zombie tool. If you can lure them into, they will go after an open flame. See, here's the problem. You want to lure them into a pit with an open flame, something they can't walk out of, because if they can get out of it, you now have a burning zombie trying to bite you.
Right, exactly. I mean, me and Mike tried early on in our zombie fighting career to make Molotov cocktails. Terrible idea.
Oh, God.
You just catch them on flames. Now you've got a flaming biter that wants to kill you.
That's how we lost Jonathan.
Yeah. God rest his soul. So yeah, Molotov cocktails, bad idea. If you can, like Mike said, if you can make a pit, preferably one with pits like spikes in the bottom, to drop them in, maybe you'll damage the brain in the fall, and then have that thing catch on fire, to hold them there, so you can completely inflame the body. That does work, but sort of a rare special occasion when you can get that to work.
Right, and, you know, while we're on the subject of Molotov cocktails, I think we should bring up the pros and cons of certain weapons. Let's start with the more popular weapons that we've seen on stuff like The Walking Dead. Like, everybody loves Daryl in that show. Daryl and his crossbow, it's become a symbol now. Well, guess what? Crossbows are good, but I would not recommend one, actually, especially when you're dealing with a horde. For one thing, you have a very limited ammo supply, unless you're just carrying around a quiver with like 100 frickin' arrows.
Which, they're bolts, and no, you're not. You're not gonna carry a quiver with 100 bolts.
No, you're not. Second, I don't know how he does it so quickly on that show, I guess it's like TV magic or whatever. Crossbows take a minute to reload. You have to pull back and
Have you ever shot a crossbow?
Well, you know I owned that one crossbow pistol back in the day. I mean, and I would have to sit there and pull that son of a bitch. And guess what? That's not always a guarantee. Just because you're pulling back on it, that's not a guarantee that it's going to cock it. Sometimes it slips. And guess what? Those crossbows, just like a bow and arrow, those strings can break. Those cables can break, especially from overuse. You start developing stress fractures in the fiber. That thing's eventually going to fail on you. And guess what? Limited ammo supply. And how are you going to get your ammo back? Pull it back out of the zombie? And you better be a damn crack shot with that.
If you are fighting more than a few, getting them back out is just not even an option.
You better be
fairly close quartered to use. You're not going to. The crossbow is not a long range weapon.
I mean, it can be a long range weapon, but not for pinpoint headshots.
No, I mean.
And that's another thing that most people don't realize. The only part of a zombie's brain that's actually still animated is that brain stem, and it's in the lower back. A real zombie can come at you with an arrow sticking straight through the top of its head. Just because you hit part of the brain doesn't mean you hit the right part. Believe it or not, we actually discovered the best way to kill a zombie is from behind. Try getting behind a zombie. It's not easy. That's why you have to employ your distractions.
Yeah. So another one that I really don't ever recommend, everyone wants to go full retard. They want full automatic weapons. They want to just like spray and pray.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible idea for zombies. My best recommendation is either a bolt action rifle or even a .22 long rifle.
Mm-hmm.
With either hollow point or magnum ammunition.
Right.
Because you're going to get the most ammo, and it's going to be fairly quiet, and all you're trying to do is destroy that brainstem. A good shot is going to do that.
Okay, and you know, bringing up automatic rifles, let's discuss some of the pros and cons of this. I mean, yeah, you've got some firepower there, but guess what? When you're running, it's hard to keep one of those steady, first off. Second, I mean, yeah, you can fire a lot of ammunition really quick, really, really quick. But guess what? Those things don't have unlimited ammunition. You know how long it takes to go through a damn machine gun clip or whatever you want to call it?
A magazine?
Magazine. Yeah, I deliberately screw those up to irritate you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can take an Uzi, just take an Uzi, and press that damn thing down. In less than 10 seconds, you're going to be out of ammo if you're just holding it.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
M16s aren't much better.
Exactly. I mean, even 3-round burst, yeah, that's why I said... single round, and even bolt action, because it's going to make you slow down. You're going to have to, you know, work that bolt. Semi-automatic, kind of iffy. If you have good trigger control, that's good. But yeah, like I said, bolt action is probably the best. An old hunting rifle. There you go.
Now let's move on to the other thing that most people think about in a zombie apocalypse, the shotgun. Yes, it's good if you can't hit the broadside of a barn. But guess what? We're talking about tiny little buckshots. We're talking about a zombie. Yes, this will be great for taking one's head off from close range. The further away you get, the less likely that's going to be. I mean, you can't really piss a zombie off more than, they're born pissed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're only really good for up close.
Yeah, I mean, you can use slugs, but then you're sort of, a slug isn't as good as just getting a high-powered hunting gun. I mean, hunting rifle. You're better off. I mean, the shotgun, you know, and all these weapons are good to have in your arsenal for different reasons. If you've got an Uzi with silver ammunition, it's good to take out werewolves.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, if you've got a shotgun with, you know, wooden beads, it's good to blow the heart out of a vampire.
Absolutely.
But zombies are a whole different matter.
Right. I mean, they have a much smaller kill zone. And,
you gotta be precise. You gotta hit that thing. Nothing else works.
And, but then there's gonna be people out there. What about Michonne's, weapon of choice off The Walking Dead? The katana blade. Guess what? You know how close you gotta be to a zombie to kill one of the motherfuckers with a katana blade?
Even then, if you were fighting something where decapitation was a thing, a katana would work well.
Right.
But you need to destroy the head.
I mean, and that's even something they've shown on The Walking Dead. Yeah, she can cut it. Yeah, you can cut a zombie's head off. Guess what? If you accidentally walk up near a zombie's head forgetting it's there, it can still bite you. It can still turn you.
Yeah. A heavier, if you need a close quarter weapon, something much heavier would be better choice. Possibly a hatchet or an axe. I mean, it's going to be kind of hard to swing, but you'll be sure to destroy the brain.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you need something close quarter, I've seen people use machetes. Once again, not a fan of the machete. It's too flimsy. It gets stuck in the skull too much. you've got, like, the zombie on the ground trying to, like, pull the machete out of the brain matter. It's slowing you down.
Mm-hmm.
An axe to the middle of the skull is going to split that thing wide open. You're done. You're moving on.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that I can't give enough credit to, believe it or not, hand grenades. They always say close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Well, I have been in a situation where I ran smack out of fucking horseshoes. Now, I mean, you've got a good chance that, I mean, you throw a hand grenade into a group of zombies, A, they're going to follow movement, for one thing.
Right.
So that will get them for a minute. Plus, they're not going to run from a hand grenade like a human would.
No.
So you'll be able to blast the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Now, it's almost guaranteed to take out the few around it and possibly cripple, you know, the surrounding area.
Yeah. You're going to have to go through more than likely and do some finishing blows.
I mean, absolutely, but it's going to give you the time. They're going to be off their feet for a minute.
Right.
I mean, if they still have feet after that.
Yeah.
Because it'll be on the ground when it blows up.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. It's easier to kill a zombie when it's crawling.
Yeah. And I mean, as a byproduct, for good and bad, is loud, is going to draw in more zombies. If you know you only have a limited amount of zombies, a small infection, great to use a hand grenade. The police hate that shit, and you got to get out of the area quick, but... it lets you know that you're going to pull in all the zombies.
And guess what? If you've got a good rooftop perch and you've, you know, you've got the door, you're secure up there, guess what? You've got hordes of zombies and you've got a crud load of hand grenades. All you got to do, toss one down there. Boom. You're going to grab a bunch of them. The sound's going to attract it. And you can just play dominoes like that all fucking night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, hand grenades, they do work.
It's hard to get a hold of hand grenades sometimes. You gotta be in the know.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the Ramirez brothers and their hookup, then we would have probably never got them back in the day.
Yeah. One thing I cannot stress enough for our Evil Dead fans out there, chainsaws are a really shitty thing to bring into a zombie fight.
As much as I hate to say, because I'm a huge Evil Dead fan.
As much style as they have, as much flair as they have, they're very frickin' heavy. They jam.
They're loud.
So you're going to be drawing in more.
You're going to be shooting guts into your face.
Yeah, it is not. It is a weapon I strongly advise against when it comes to it.
Yes. They only work well on deadites.
That's how we lost Marty.
Yeah. Oh, Marty.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's anything you want to add to this zombie fighting little talk we're having? I mean, we're doing this as a public service announcement to our loyal listeners. I mean, the dead have risen.
Yeah, so be careful, be quiet. Those are all good things, and just be safe, y'all.
Oh, and what the best you can hope for in a zombie apocalypse is a Shaun of the Dead-style zombie apocalypse, where the zombies can actually be put to work after you take them back.
Yeah, there is no cure for any of the zombie infections we've ever found.
No, don't look for the cure. There is no cure.
Don't try to make them your friend. Don't try to put them to work. If your loved ones become zombies, there's only one thing you can do for them and for yourself, and that's put them down quickly.
Right.
We've had so many cases where we get to a place and someone has their, you know, loved one locked up in a room. What percentage of the times does it ever turn out good?
That never turns out good.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while we get to save someone, but most of the time, everyone gets infected and we have to destroy an entire household.
I mean, you gotta realize, once they're a zombie, they're no longer your loved one. There is no part of them left in there.
If you don't do the job, we will.
Absolutely. And if you stand in our way, you will fall in our path.
Yeah. So, let's. What do we got next?
Okay, let's see. Oh, wait.
Speaking of zombies.
Oh, yeah, we've got Jake calling in.
From zombies.com.
All right, he is on line three. Go ahead, Jake.
Hey, it's Jake from Zombies here, just checking in. I want to let you guys know about a zombie I had to kill this afternoon. I was headed to the bus, like I do almost every day, going up to school. I get on the bus, and there's this guy sitting next to me coughing the entire time. Well, it turns out he actually gets off the bus with me follows me into my classroom, follows me into the math classroom, right? And we're sitting in there, and we're in the middle of the lesson. Next thing I know, he starts coughing even more wildly. Next thing I know, he starts coughing up blood, right, onto this guy standing next to him. He was insane. So all I could think of to do, grab my textbook, right? They're big, they're heavy, they've got pointy corners. Got to bash the guy's head in. Turns out, he was a zombie. And unfortunately, so was the guy next to him. But that's what happens when you sit next to one and you get caught blood on. Anyhow, I'll let you know next time I come across one. Watch out next time you're on the bus. Stay safe out there. Talk to you later, man. Bye.
Wow. That's, I've never thought about using, college textbooks to destroy a zombie.
You wouldn't think, but I mean, yeah.
Big, heavy, yeah, I mean, you could destroy the brain with that. I mean, as an improvised weapon, because obviously, in, you know, college, Jake can't carry in, you know, the proper weapons.
Oh, God, yeah, no, but I mean, there's plenty of books around.
So, I'm glad you're safe, Jake. It's good to hear from you.
Absolutely, plenty of books out there. All right, well, it's time for our Gadget Puck segment. It's going to be a little bit different this time. As well as monster hunting, since retirement, I have occasionally gotten antsy, and this is something that James and I actually haven't done together. It's something we're going to do, and there's going to be video of it.
No, this week, actually.
Yeah, this week coming up on the YouTube channel. I am an amateur paranormal investigator. I say amateur basically because I haven't gone pro yet.
Right.
You know, I'm not on the big teams. I mean, they actually have their own, they have their own union and everything. I'm not a union card carrying member. So,
oh, thank you.
But I am a ghost hunter. I just want to talk a little bit about some of the ghost hunting implements that I actually use in the trade. It's more of a hobby at this point. I'm not full-time. I still have my day job and everything. Right. And there's just not much cause. I mean, there's cause for it, but people don't want to really pay ghost hunters very often, unless they're going to be on TV, and then they'll just, you know, sign over the deed to their house. But I just want to talk about some of the tools of the trade that I use. Now, when you're ghost hunting, it's very rare that you actually get to catch them. Ghosts are hard to get your hands on. They can get their hands on you. Don't get me wrong. I've seen many fellow investigators get scratched, get shoved, actually get pushed downstairs, have objects thrown at them. Oh, they can attack you. A good ghost can go, well, a good ghost is one thing. A bad ghost can go all poltergeist on you, and you're screwed for a minute there. If you're lucky, you run out screaming, and they're just sitting back there laughing at you on their own plane of existence.
Well, I've got some tips coming up after you on ways to deal with that whole poltergeist crap.
Now, if you think you're dealing with a ghost infestation, first off, you're going to want to prove it. I mean, first thing I would recommend is looking around your house, making sure that, you know, you're airtight, you know, all the windows and everything are airtight, floorboard. A lot of things can trick a person into a ghost infestation. But there are great ways out there, tools of the trade that you can use to see whether or not you've got a spook moved in next door. Now, one thing I love to use is just a simple digital recorder. You can get them at any Walmart or electronics store. A digital recorder, we use those for EVP sessions. Now, an EVP is an electronic voice phenomenon. It's basically you have a handheld digital recorder. It doesn't require tape. It just requires batteries. You want to stand in a place where you... one of the first things, if you're starting to feel chill bumps or you notice a definite decrease in the temperature of the room, that is a great time to do an EVP session. I always recommend doing it in the dark, but you can do it in the light just as easily. Basically, you start recording on your digital recorder, and you start asking questions if you think there's a ghost around. Now, there's two types of EVPs you can pretty much get. You can get unintelligent and intelligent responses, because there's basically two types of ghosts. There are ghosts that don't realize they're dead and are just living the same moments over and over again. Then there's the kind that I actually like screwing around with. They're the ones that know they're dead. Some of them really like to screw with people, and they will talk. Most of the time, though, you hear it as a, kind of a whisper. Even if they're screaming, it just comes across as a whisper because it's barely on this sound of the soundboard. Now, if you really want to hear a ghost voice good, I'd recommend a spirit box. Now, a spirit box is just a little device that scrolls through white noise. Basically, it scans, like, for example, all the blank stations on the radio, basically, rapidly. I mean, like, fraction of a second, it's going through them. You can ask ghosts questions that way. If you're lucky, you can get a response back and hear it clear as crystal. Now, some of my fellow brethren on the show, Ghost Adventures, Zach, Nick, and Aaron, they have really captured some fantastic voices coming across in their spirit box. I would definitely recommend for anybody to watch that. Now, you're going to need night vision, especially if you're doing this at night. And the reason I recommend doing it at night, doing it during the day, shadows can come from any a number of places. If you've got good night vision goggles, night vision cameras, stuff like that, you're working in pitch black. You don't have to worry about shadows except those cast by your own night vision lighting, which can only show up on your camera. Now, if you're working with multiple people, which I always recommend doing, you don't want to do this crap by yourself. People have gotten killed that way. You just got to watch, you know, where people are pointing their cameras. You know, if somebody's behind you and you're recording, you could accidentally capture your own shadow on it. You just got to be careful. Now, let's see. I think you actually had something you wanted to talk about. That's all I've got. Those are the main things I like to use. But if you do plan on going out and trying your own paranormal investigation, just make sure you know all the facts and make sure you got a strong constitution. Don't just think it's, you know, if you just think it's fun, you go out there and piss yourself right in the middle of somebody's house. So, moving on, you wanted to talk a little bit about salt.
Yes. Salt needs to be in your preps anyway. Salt is a vital, important prep for all you survivalists out there.
Paranormal aside, it makes food tastier.
It does make food tastier. It does preserve food. It has about a million uses. And one of those uses are against the paranormal.
Absolutely.
So, salt can keep ghosts, like you said, the the poltergeists. It can help keep them out of your space. You just block them off, you know, block doorways and stuff. Salt will also keep demons from coming in, and hellhounds.
For some reason, hellhounds, demons, poltergeists, evil spirits have a real problem trying to get across a solid line of salt.
Right, so it needs to be there. You need to have salt. It's very important to keep you safe. If you have any thought that you've got something supernatural after you, just put down the salt. It's so cheap, there's no reason not to.
And the one good thing is it works with virtually any kind of salt. You got your table salt, you got your sea salt, you got your kosher salt. That's good for Jewish ghosts.
Yeah, just buy the cheap-ass salt just put a masking tape on the front and say, for ghosts. And just have it set, have your ghost survival kit set up. You've got iron bars, you've got your salt, you're good to go. If you know you have a ghost infestation, just grab your box. I keep it in a milk crate. That's what I do at home.
You know, I found out, believe it or not, in a pinch, even rock salt is good. Problem with rock salt, you got to make sure you got that solid line. Any little, if you miss it by an inch, though.
You know what? You know what rock salt is really good for?
What's that?
Putting it down the barrel of your shotgun.
Absolutely.
It will fuck a ghost world up so fast.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the ways that you can get rid of a ghost really, really quick.
I mean, not permanently. They're still going to keep coming after you, but at least you're going to dissipate them for a moment and, you know, get a little breathing room, get a little room to work around there.
It's also good for taking down assassin women hell-bent on revenge.
That too. So rock salt. So salt needs to be in your preps for the mundane and the paranormal.
Now, believe it or not, I was actually in an investigation one time at a gourmet restaurant, and I managed to use several kinds of gourmet sea salts.
Oh, yeah?
Believe it or not, they didn't work as good, but they still worked. You had to use a hell of a lot of extra salt because there's other stuff mixed in there.
Right.
Yeah, so you just got to be careful. You got to just basically lay down a double line. But
yeah.
In a pinch.
During the wintertime, like big box stores have giant bags of pool salt, like 40, 50-pound bags for like 10 bucks.
Oh, absolutely.
So good to keep that around.
Yeah, notice you see less ghost infestations during the winter months. There's all this extra salt out.
Yeah.
It screws them up. It's hard for them to travel. Well,
luckily, it's not winter yet, because we are doing some ghost hunting. I actually might be going on a job tomorrow to work a haunted tunnel here in Tennessee, and then with you on Saturday to see if we can battle the Bell Witch, which, so My family actually has a history of the Bell Witch.
Really?
I don't think I've told you this, actually.
That's interesting. Our producer's family does, too.
So, my grandfather used to be a ground worker that lived on a cemetery over off of Edmondson Pike, over there in the sort of the South Nashville area.
Mm-hmm.
Seward's Ferry? No, no. What's that ferry down that way?
There was this guy named Bruce. He was
anyway,
a ferry.
Anyway, so they used to live on that, and I'm trying to remember the story. My dad was walking around the cemetery. I think it wasn't Mount Olive, but it was over in that area.
Okay, I know.
My favorite cemetery, yeah. So he was walking around the cemetery at night, and the Bell Witch went chasing him.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he sure it was the Bell Witch?
I think that fool tried to summon her.
Oh, for the love of God. Why
My dad
would you
was
do
the
that?
Smartest ever, yeah.
Why would you summon a dead witch?
He tried to summon her, and then he had to run out of the cemetery. She stopped chasing him once he's out of the cemetery, thankfully. Otherwise, I wouldn't be born, because he was a young teenager and stupid messing with the occult back then.
Don't summon what you can't handle. Believe it or not, they can follow you home.
Yeah, so I grew up terrified of the Bell Witch, because...
Idiot.
Yeah, the Bell Witch did something to my granddad and my dad, possibly my great-granddad. And we're supposed to be visiting the Bell Witch cave here on Saturday. So this may be the last episode of Survivalpunk, so wish us luck.
Now, producer Mike's wife, did you have anything to add? I know your family's got a little bit of history with the Bell Witch. Would you like to talk about that?
Not really. We were supposed to be related.
Oh, Jesus. All right, I think I'll make it out of this alive, seeing as I'm kind of an in-law of the Bell Witch. But good luck to you, buddy. All righty, then. I think it... DP hadn't called in just yet. I hope he's okay. So I'll just go ahead and move into my special segment. And we have talked quite a bit about ghosts, and we've talked quite a bit about zombies. Something we haven't really touched on is vampires. Now, believe it or not, most of the vampires that you've seen in movies are based on actual sightings. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. And I actually categorize them the same way. It's just easier to keep track of it. So I'd just like to take a moment here to let you know how you need to deal with the various types of vampires. I mean, now, let's start with the good old-fashioned, your Draculas, your Nosferatus. Those pretty much, that's the old-school vampires. They come from old country.
Yeah.
Now, those are, believe it or not, they're relatively easy to dispatch if you can get them in one place. I mean, if they're not in perhaps in the middle of shape-shifting. Like, the classic Dracula-type vampires, as they call them, are one of the only shapeshifters among the vampire crew, believe it or not. They can turn into a bat. They can turn into a dog. They can turn into a cloud of mist. They're hard motherfuckers to get after.
Yeah.
But if you get them, but if you catch them in their solid form, you can protect yourself with garlic. Believe it or not, that actually does work. A good wooden stake to the heart, and you gotta make sure it's wooden, for God's sake.
No veneer, no plastic. Oh, remember that fool we were hunting with that had a plastic, stupid camping stake and tried to stake a vamp with that thing?
Oh, good God.
I don't remember his name. He was too stupid, and obviously he didn't make it.
That's how we lost Jesse.
Yeah, that tard.
Oh, my God. I mean, and that was after the time that he tried to use one of those plastic, it was one of those plastic gear shifts made to look like wood. Just because it looks white like wood doesn't mean it's wood. But getting back on point, that's actually the only type of vampire you can kill with running water, believe it or not. You can drown them in a river. Hmm. You cannot drown them in a lake. You cannot drown them in a bathtub. You can drown them in a river. Now, believe it or not, now holy water and garlic can actually burn that type. It won't kill them though. It won't kill them. No matter what you do, it'll basically give them a bad rash. So you just got to watch out for that. Now let's move on to what I like to call the interview vampires or the Anne Ricers. Okay. Now these are a tough little breed right there. They're really easy to spot. They're the ones hanging out at the Gap. and any other clothes fashion. They're all about fashion, and most of them are gay. Or would be gay if their dick still worked. It's, you know, pretty much like that. Now, they will like to wine you and dine you and romance you. Be careful. You know, it's easy to notice they're the ones not eating. Now, wooden stakes will not work on them. If they're old enough, sunlight won't even kill them. Now you do have one benefit. Sunlight will knock them out, but just because it's in the middle of the day, don't think you can take them out. Really, don't think you, because they can attack while unconscious. Like I said, the older ones, I mean, if you get one that's only been turned for like maybe 50 years or yet less, something like that, you catch them out in the sunlight, you will fry them to a crisp. You catch one that's like 500 years or older, or anything like that, you're going to give them a really bad sunburn.
Yeah.
Basically, with them, you have to go with total annihilation. I've seen those bastards come back from damn near everything. Best thing I can recommend for those, fireworks like a charm. But if you just set them on fire and leave them there, guess what? There's a chance a week later they could pull them back up. Burn them down to ashes and scatter those fucking ashes. I cannot express that enough. Now, let's move on to what I like to call the bladers. They're actually pretty easy to take out. Silver works on them, wood works on them, sunlight works on them. They're kind of the pussies of the
vampire. Decapitation?
Decapitation works on them. They're kind of the pussies of the vampire world, frankly. Pretty much anything can take them out. They're relatively smart, though. They wear enough sunblock, they can go out in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
That's not a trick that works with a lot of vampires. But, you know, it's easy to spot them in the daytime. They're the real pale ones that look kind of slippery. So, you know, pretty much everything works. Now, then, I think the last type of vampire I actually want to talk about are the Twilighters.
I don't want to talk about them.
I know you don't want to talk about them. They've given us nightmares for years, but it needs to be brought up. Twilighters, there's basically two ways to kill them. You can go for decapitation, or you can break their hearts. And they might just kill themselves.
Womp, womp, womp.
They're the easiest to spot, though. They don't have a problem with going out in the sunlight, except that it makes them sparkly. So you see anybody sparkling out in the sunlight, just, you know, tell them their girlfriend dumped them or some shit.
Or just stake them. And if they're just an emo wearing glitter, then you've done the world a favor there, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on that note, I think we finally got DP on the line. The Florida Hillbilly, he's been on the show before. Not people. I only found out recently he was even a member of the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we got him on, I think, line 3. DB, go ahead.
DB, are you there? Are you there, DB?
DB?
DB!
DB!
Oh, God. I think something got DB.
Go into the light, my friend. Go into the light.
Alright, well.
This was a little bit unexpected.
Yeah, Florida Hillbilly DB, my longtime buddy, something happened to him.
Hopefully they got the chickens and he just ran from the phone.
Yeah, I'm hoping that there's not more zombies down there.
Zombies do like chickens.
And Florida, zombies are always eating people's faces naked. So, zombie, DB, be safe. I hope something didn't happen to you, buddy.
All right, yeah, poor DB. All right, now it's time for our Nutrition Punk segment. And I'm actually going to hand this over to you, our fitness and nutrition expert. What it takes to staying fit, Monster Squad style.
Alright. So, you've really got to build up a certain fitness level to survive and even thrive fighting against the undead. Mike and I, you know, back when we were, you know, day in, day out monster hunters, we were in peak physical condition.
Believe it or not, I was skinny at one point.
He was skinny. I was fairly skinny, had a big head, you know. So, one of the most important things that you need to focus on for fighting any of these monsters is cardio. Zombieland had it right. Cardio, cardio, cardio. And I'm not talking like long distance stuff here.
We're not trying to be like Mr. Run 50 marathons in 50 days. We want to build a strong 2 mile speed and a strong sprint. We don't need slow, long distance endurance for this. We want bursts of speed. We want to know we can turn it on and go for a small distance. Cause, you know, for zombies, if you sprint for 2 miles, you've left them miles behind.
Absolutely.
You're done.
Now that's all good. Now cardio, that's all good at cardio, good speed workout. That's all fine and dandy for zombies. What would you recommend for vampires? Now a lot of them can basically move across the room in a blink of an eye. All the cardio in the world's not going to help you there. What would you recommend for a good vampire fight?
I can't remember the name of the company, but there's a really good company that we used to use that had a garlic cologne. I know what you're saying, guys. Garlic cologne. Terrible.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it sounds corny. But
there's not a lot you can do, to really physically outpower most vampires. You can get as strong as you can get. You can get as fast as you can get. You'll never match their preternatural power. You just can't do it.
I would recommend working on your upper body, though. Especially your arms.
If you want to go like Bill Goldberg and build giant trapezius muscles to make your neck harder to bite, that's another thing. And speaking of the nutrition part, Mike and I would eat a ton of garlic every day. I mean, we would like fill our blood with this garlic. We're eating so much of it.
Now, I don't know if anybody out there has seen the sequels to the movie The Lost Boys. Not many people have.
I avoided it.
Sorry there, Corey, but actually, he had a cocktail that he drank in that called frog juice. Mm. It was made up of holy water, crushed garlic, and raw eggs. Believe it or not, that's actually something that I recommend, especially if you're going to go vampire hunting full time.
Yeah,
I mean, you got your protein right there for one thing. The body does need protein, plus garlic and holy water. You want to make yourself as unappealing to bite as humanly possible. So that's a nutrition. And when I was talking about upper body, especially the arms, it is hard to stab a person through their breastplate anyway. And we're talking about a preternatural vampire's breastplate. And depending on the kind of vampire you got, some of them have actually evolved to have bone around their heart. So you have to be able to have enough force to get the stake in there.
Yeah, you definitely want, like Mike said, upper body strength, forearm, bicep strength, good stuff there. It'll also help you when you're beheading monsters. You know how hard it is to chop something's head off? A lot of these monsters have tough necks, strong muscles, rippling. So you really need to whack it hard.
And believe, that's what she said. And believe it or not, I mean, having nothing to do with monsters, look up classic beheadings throughout histories. People, the ones where you actually had the executioner with the axe, some of those went horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah. So
taking multiple whacks just to get through a human neck.
You need a sharp weapon and a strong, strong body and a good technique. You can't just willy-nilly swing your axe or your katana or your hatchet. You need good technique, good weapon, good strength.
Now, what would you recommend for werewolves?
I prefer to take them out at a distance. So if you need to run, but they're fast, you can't match their strength, their claws. If they get a scratch on you, you're done for.
I would recommend LASIK surgery, especially if you have any kind of eye problems. From firing at a distance, you're going to want your eyes in as peak physical condition as humanly possible. Yeah.
If you're going to do close quarter, shotgun with silver, buckshot.
Mm-hmm.
Just light those things up. So there's that. You can go with a silver knife, but man, that's tough.
Now there is one, and I hate to drop this on you, seeing how we only ever fought one of these things. But just in the off chance that one of our listeners out there finds themselves face to face with a dragon, What would you, how would you recommend that they prepare for that? I know it's been something like 12 years since we fought that one dragon, and it damn near killed us. Rest in peace, Gabriel. But what would you recommend to get ready?
You're gonna need a heavy, heavy, heavy broad axe. You're gonna need a giant axe. If you got a buddy that can distract it, sorry, Gabriel, and a sniper friend to take out the eyes, so it can't see, yes, it will piss the monster off. Yes, your distraction may get killed if they're not fast enough. Hence, cardio, cardio, cardio.
I'd recommend a lot of weight training, getting ready for a dragon.
Yeah, you're gonna need to sever the head of the dragon, preferably in a clean blow.
And keep in mind, some of their necks are a good 3 feet thick.
Yeah. If you're really, really nifty and you can trap the dragon's head somewhere, and then so one time we made a special sort of throwover harness of C4, we just blew that fucker's head off.
Mm-hmm.
That works too. It's sort of difficult. A heavy silver broadaxe and a strong back.
Now, if you are able to get the dimensional portal open, which is you have to have the planets in alignment, you have to have the right equipment, and you have to set off a nuclear device at precisely the moment when the moon aligns with the sun, you can get your hand on a Vorpal sword. It's not an easy... There's only one of them in existence, but they're guaranteed to take down any dragon out there.
We can't comment on where that one happens to be. Do not come looking in Mike's storage shed for it.
Yeah, if you do happen to find my special secret hidden shed...
If we indeed do have it.
Just stay away from the large knife that looks like it's made out of moth wings and moonbeams.
So that about wraps that up. That's fitness. So just remember cardio and strong arms and a strong back.
Now, in the event of a monster apocalypse, monster attack, and you need extra backup, sometimes you might need an army to help you out. Like the Survival Punk Army.
Yes. If you have a problem, drop me a line, james@survivalpunk.com, and me and Mike will be there to help all of our Survival Punk Army members. It is a benefit. We will fight monsters for you. We will be there for you to defend you against the zombie hordes.
And our caravan of Hummers.
You also get exclusive discounts to, I think, 11 vendors. You get ebooks from some great people.
You get exclusive content.
You get exclusive content. What? You get all the Survival Punk podcast episodes in convenient zip files of 10 episodes, which is, I think, current up to date now. They're all uploaded. So 1 through 10, 11 through 20, and 21 through 30 are all up now in the back end.
So find just hundreds of the little button links on Survival Punk podcast to sign up for your membership. Because remember one thing, the Survival Punk Army wants you!
And I need to buy more silver bullets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now it has come for the very special moment I've been waiting for all episode. A very scary Halloween edition of Mike's Worst Cases. That's where I ask our main Survival Punk James here 5 questions. He has to get at least 3 of them right, or he will be fed to the demons. Okay, are you ready?
As always.
Alrighty. Question number 1. You find yourself in a swamp in New Jersey. You hear a rustling in the woods behind you. What creature have you possibly been attacked by?
Is it the New Jersey Devil?
Correct. Okay, that's ding, 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 ding. All right. Question number 2. You find yourself in a windmill in Transylvania. I'm sorry, a windmill in somewhere in Germany, okay? You're being attacked by something that looks like it was put together by a mad scientist. You have 3 choices of what of what you can use to take it down. Do you grab A, the shotgun, B, the flamethrower, or C, the stun gun?
I'm going to assume I'm being attacked by Frankenstein's monster, who is terribly afraid of fire, so I'm going to go with a flamethrower that will at least scare him off.
I am sorry that the correct answer was the stun gun. See, here's the thing. He got activated with electricity, and you can possibly short him out that way. Fire will just piss him off.
Fire will scare him off.
It will scare him, but it can also piss him off. I would definitely go with the stun gun.
I'm pretty sure he can absorb electricity. It just powers him up more. It'll make him stronger.
It'll short him out.
No. No, I've seen him take electric shots.
Yeah, it brought him back, but you can also stop his heart that way.
I'm going to say this one's contested.
Okay, contested. Okay, question number 3.
I mean, I fought Frankenstein's monster that one time by myself because you ate bad burritos or were in the 7-Eleven shitter all day.
That was not...
You totally abandoned me!
That was not Frankenstein's monster, that was Frankenbaum's monster. Whatever. You can tell by the little yarmulke.
Uh-huh.
Any frickin' way. All right, question number 3. You find yourself out in Scotland, in the middle of a giant loch, so to speak. You're now being attacked by something from the depths below. Do you A... Okay, you're out in a rowboat, by the way. Do you A... Immediately head for shore. B, start firing your machine gun into the water. Or C, just sit there quietly and hope it goes away.
I have not heard of many cases of Nessie murdering anyone. Spooking people, yes. So I'm going to call my buddy Dan Green from the Greening Out podcast from Scotland and chit-chat with him while Nessie floats around and does her thing. So I'll be sitting there.
You'll be sitting there quietly?
Yes, I'm not going to row to freak her out, and I'm not going to shoot my machine gun at her to piss her off and have her murder me then.
Ding, 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 ding. Sit quietly and wait till she goes away was the correct answer.
Yes.
Okay, so you've now gotten 2.5 of these right?
2.5.
2.5. One was contested.
Really, what I'm going to do is just whip out my wallet and be like, here's that tree fitty you need, Loch Ness Monster. Tree fitty.
Okay, there was a D. I just didn't want to bring it up.
Tree fitty. Okay, next one.
Okay. And lastly, you find yourself in Tokyo, Japan.
Oh, no.
Nuclear testing has just happened out in the ocean. You were standing in the middle of a very large metropolitan area surrounded by skyscrapers. You hear the ground rumbling. You look up, and you're like, oh my god, I'm in Cloverville. No, right, I'm in the wrong country.
Gojira!
Exactly.
Yes.
Where do you take cover? A, at the top of the skyscraper. B, in the subway, or C, in the Walmart.
I'm going to go with the subway, because you almost never see Godzilla destroy below the street level. If you're on top of the subway, if you're on top of the skyscraper, you're totally getting knocked over, kicked over, drop kicked, or irradiated. And Walmart is no longer in Japan, so that doesn't exist. I can't go there. Subway it is. B, final answer.
Dun, dun, dun. Ding, 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 ding. Correct. You hide in the subway.
Because he can never break through that darn asphalt.
So you are correct. You have won the special edition of Mike's Worst Monster Cases.
Are you finally going to get me that silver-tipped bolt for my crossbow?
Yeah, I guess I do owe you that.
Yes! You skipped out the last few Christmases, buddy.
All right. Well, we've got one more report coming in on line 37. Looks like our friend Jeff Radke is calling in. Jeff, what do you got going on down there?
Hey, guys. This is Jeff from the Lost Skills Podcast. There's been a lot of weird stuff going on here today. I remember we talked earlier today, and it seems like all of the animals and stuff from Wisconsin's folklore are coming to pass. It's really strange around here. So far, the beast of Bay Road has been out. People have seen a hide behind. People have seen the phantom chickens of Seymour. The Lake Winnebago water monster has been out, and the Devil's Lake monster has been spotted. And it's getting towards dark. I've heard reports of people seeing the Ridgeway ghost. My friend had a run-in with the hide behind. His neighbor was taken while they were talking. The hide behind hides behind stuff, so people don't even really know what it looks like. It just drags you off into the woods. It's really weird. Oh, man, what is going on with my dog? He's just barking his fool head off. I better go check that out. Huh. I don't see anything. Oh, there he goes again. I better go check it out. All right, there's something out there. I better take a look and see what's going on. Oh my God. I think that's a hodag. Well, he's gone now. Oh, there's another one. Yeah, I got them. They're all gone now. Oh, wow, that was really lucky. Hey, what's that? Holy cow, they're everywhere. Oh, shit.
Oh, crap. I think something happened to Jeff.
Jeff, are you there? Jeff!
Lost Jeff.
I'd like to take a moment of silence for Jeff. My prayers are with his family. I hope he's okay.
Alright, I guess we need to pack our bags and head north.
I hate ending on such a sour note like that.
I will get revenge for Jeff.
By Grabthar's hammer. By the sons of Warvan, you shall be avenged.
I will kill every motherfucker in Wisconsin.
All right.
Every monster will get killed.
Oh my God. Poor Jeff. Well, other than Jeff's possible untimely demise, I think it's been a pretty spooktacular, show, to quote the vernacular. Think we've really educated people out there on how you're gonna survive those monsters that you all didn't believe existed until tonight, idiots.
Yeah, I mean, part of Survival Punk is educating people and helping them survive. So I think today we really accomplished that mission.
Absolutely.
I mean, people are going to be able to take action against these monsters that they took Jeff. I don't want you guys to be next.
No Reese's peanut butter cups for Jeff.
No.
This is sad Halloween.
Sad times. I mean, I was expecting phone call from DB earlier. You heard that. We were asking about him. And I think something happened to Florida Hillbilly. I think maybe another face-eating zombie got him as well.
Yeah.
So we're losing friends.
It's kind of a horrible thing, but, yeah, we'll do what we can to make sure this doesn't happen to anybody else.
Yeah.
But, for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
And this is James.
And remember to pack your wood, pack your silver, pack your garlic, and make sure you pack a lunch.
Silver tips to survive.
Fire from the fire.